Dan, as I see you sitting here, right, and being a nightman for so long on this radio station on Thursday nights, working alone most nights, right? Alone in the studio, but not alone in the community, obviously, because you've got hundreds and thousands of listeners. But here you are at the end of a long, long career at KUVO, and now you're just surrounded by people needing your time. Isn't that ironic? Well, you know, they always say when you say goodbye, everybody comes out of the woodwork, so to speak, you know?
They're out.
But you've always been appreciated and enjoyed, and the ideas and the things that you had put forth on the air are always been a real special part of this radio station and the musical landscape in our community, man. 35 years. I don't know, is it 35?
It is. It was 1988. And it was, it's such a long time ago, it's half my life.
Well, let's start with you refreshing my memory of those first weeks or first year, if you will.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And your involvement with KUVO and how you ended up on Thursday nights and how the whole Miles Davis thing transpired.
1988 was kind of a year that my ears retuned back to jazz and to Miles. I had listened to Miles going all the way back to high school. But 1988 was kind of the year that I really discovered KUVO. I had a coworker that talked to me about the station back then, and I just wasn't listening to KUVO that much until that year. And then I pledged, and the first time I called to pledge, I called and a woman took my pledge, and I found out relatively soon that was none other than Flo Hernandez Ramos, who took my pledge.
Right.
So it started there, and then it was shortly after that because we were going off the air at 1 a.m. on weeknights and 2 on Saturday nights. And so it was not long after that from you we found out that we were going to go overnight on Friday and Saturday nights, and you made it known that you were looking for people that could do that shift. The very first time I was on, Owen Beaver was on like 11 to 2 on Saturday nights, right before we went on all night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I came to hang out with Owen, and next thing I know, Owen says, "Why don't you take the mic?" And so I took the mic, and I back announced a set of music that we had come up with. And next thing I know, Owen is saying, "Okay, hey, I'll see you. I'm taking off now."
Sounds like
yeah. I mean, yeah. Bless his heart. Yeah. That was how we rolled back then.
When did the whole aspect of Miles and the Miles specials and stuff actually begin?
That was right at the beginning.
Okay.
Because basically, I got trained on the board from Frank Bonney, and that. You know, looking back, that was a lot of valuable time that he spent with me at the very beginning. And I already had ideas for that at that point because I had Ian Carr's biography of Miles, and it was the first time that there was, you know, detailed listings of Miles's recordings. And it was like, oh, so this came before that, and this came after that. So that kind of just opened the mental gates for me.
Last question about Miles real quick. Did you ever catch him in concert?
I did. Okay. He came here. It was less than a year after I got here. It was January of 83.
That was the Rainbow Music Hall.
The Rainbow. Right, yeah. The Rainbow. That's right.
Yeah, I was there that night as well.
And there were some other folks that I got to see back in the day. I got to see Morgan. Mm-hmm. Which is
really,
yeah, he's been gone more than 50 years,
Wow.
So there are some advantages for us to be this advanced in age, and so you know,
thank you for reminding me,
yeah,
it's a good thing,
So I got to see Morgan, I got to see McCoy Tyner a couple of times, and Red Rodney came to Denver a few times, and so I got to see him, and yeah, there are a lot of people that. We're in Denver, you know. One of the people that I would like to mention is Nat Yarbrough, because I would go and I would close the Peck when I was on at 2 a.m. on Saturday night. The Peck was open until 1:30, and that was perfect because I could just go right there, and I could stand there and talk to some of the players if I got the chance. I got a chance to talk to Red Holloway for a minute and got to stand up real close to Al Gray while he was riffing on some of these bassy tunes that was happening at the Peck. But it seemed like, you know, that's where I first encountered Nat, because he was in the house band at that point. And then it seemed like every time I'd go to a show around Denver, Nat would be playing. And so, you know, I saw Larry Coryell and Nat was playing drums. And I saw Gordon Sims and Nat was playing drums. And, it, you know, so.
Beautiful cat.
And Nat was really the first player that told me that he heard me and appreciated what I was doing. And the thrill of that gave me a lot of confidence with, I guess I might be doing the right thing here, you know. And so those are the kind of things. Yeah.
Thank you for reminiscing on that, because that was Nat Yarborough in a nutshell. Beautiful human being, great smile, and played behind everybody.
Yeah,
he was just amazing. That side door open at the Peck, and the first person you see is Nat Yarborough.
That's right.
You know, then Freddie and all the guys, man.
Yeah, exactly. Goodness. And Freddie and Joe Bonner were people that would call me up when I was on air.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, yeah. And I'd get some talk from them, and it was like, you know, or what was that tune? Or, hey, is that
yeah, they were real jazz hounds.
They were, you know? And so I appreciated so much that they would take the time to, they would like a track enough. Oh yeah, I know that tune, and that was always cool to hear fells like that. So
boy,
yeah,
I tell you,
yeah,
brings back memories. I get emotional, thinking about it.
Well, and I think there was at least one time where Tom Tilton and Joe came down to the station while I was on, and we had an interview, and that was definitely a thrill.
Did you get a word in edgewise?
No, I didn't worry too much about that. I just let them, you know.
Between Tom and Joe, man,
they could
lay out a story.
Yeah, exactly. The first person I ever interviewed was Angela Bofill, and it was like her manager called me up one night when I was on, you know, a Wednesday or a Thursday night. Angela Bofill's coming into town. Can you interview her? Well, I guess I can. And so she was the first one. And it's like we probably only had one of her records. And I was able to, you know, play one tune, you know. But that's just the way things would go. Is once in a while, somebody would call you out of the blue. And then another one, which was great, that you were able to hook me up to where I would talk to Poncho Sanchez, because he was coming in, and he was playing at La Rumba.
Mm-hmm.
And at La Rumba, I mean, the dancers are amazing over there. But then at the end of the night, in the break, I talked to Poncho for a minute because we had talked on air, and he was great. He was just so inviting and everything. And, oh, yeah, we talked the other night because we had talked on Thursday, and here was Saturday night, and there he was at La Rumba with his band. But also, that was when Ed Martinez was up on in the loft up there playing music at the break.
That's right. Yeah, he was our host on Sundays for the salsa show, salsa and Latin jazz show, and then he'd be at La Rumba spinning records as well.
Yeah,
boy, those were the days, my friend. Yeah. Dan, I can't thank you enough, man, and I want to wish you the best moving forward with whatever your next endeavors are. You're a big part of the history of jazz in this community because of your commitment as a volunteer to KUVO for 35 plus years, and that matters. You're a part of a radio station and part of a community that is richer because of the fact that we've all collectively been able to keep this thing going on the air. When you came in 1988 and started, prior to that, KUVO was not really a jazz station.
Well, I think it became one.
Yeah, we started at the end of 87. January of 88 is when we started playing straight-ahead jazz. And that's where we started to build the team that you became a part of, that seminal early team of broadcasters and people who had their own ideas about what jazz is, and also donating and bringing in their own music and things like that, sharing with what we had, because we didn't have that many CDs or even albums at the time. So
yeah, that's right.
It was special, special days back on Morrison Road, as you remember.
Oh, you bet.
Any last thing you want to share with us here?
It has really been the thrill of a lifetime to be on this radio station and sharing this music with the city and the state and the country and the world. It's been a thrill to take my own journey through the music so that I can share the music with you out there who are listening, who have at least donated your ears to this endeavor. And it's one of those things where, to me, it never felt like work.
Dan, thank you so much, man.
Carlos,
man,
thank
you, well.
You for everything,
bless
of course.
You. Yeah. Yeah. Bless you. And I know we'll see you in some upcoming shows and some things around town, man. Thank you very much for all you've contributed to KUVO. And thank you for the stories and the music. And I'm thanking you on behalf of our community more than on behalf of KUVO, because it's really about the people who are outside the studio, the people who are heard the music and heard the announcers, giving it context, giving it that warmth, and relaying the experience of music and making people be able to relate. So for that, again, I thank you very much. And good luck, my friend.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Carlos.
Thank you.